from Quite the Thing Media.
Hey, this is David Rosen from the Piecing It Together podcast. Thank you for joining Jeff, aka Podcast Father, on this journey sharing great things content creators are doing. He is the indie podcaster.
You've been searching for a podcast. Want to know about some great artists? Yeah. You've come to the right place. Indie Podcaster with your host, the Podcast Father.
Another episode of Indie Podcaster is upon us. I'm your host, Jeff, aka Podcast Father. Edward Havens from the Film Jerk Podcast is still helping me out with some introductions. How are you doing today, Mr. California?
I am still fantastic. It's a nice warm day. Thank you, global warming. Thank you, climate change. No, I joke about that, but I had to put up Christmas lights today around the house, and it was nice to do it in 80 degree weather instead of in 40 degree weather. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, first of all, where I'm at in the East, it is in the high 30s, Ed. So, and I still need to hang up Christmas lights. Thanks for reminding me, man. But no, you've got a podcast. I really like it. Film Jerk Podcast. You're a great information source for a lot of the things that went into all these film and cinema in the 1980s. And I think everybody should check your podcast out.
Thank you. I try to put as much love and care into every episode that I can. It's a lot of fun just reminding people of things that they may no longer remember, or bringing things to light to people who might not have ever known about them. Because as I've said before, there were 10,000 movies that were released between home video and theaters in the 1980s. And so many of them are forgotten just because of the way that we allow entertainment to be segmented over the years. So it's just a lot of fun to bring back a lot of these movies. And even for me, reconnect with a lot of them that I hadn't even seen in 30 to 35 years. I have a lot of fun doing it.
You have forgot more about movies than I've ever known. So that's a hell of a compliment. And sometimes I hijack his podcast and select topics for him that he doesn't want to do. But it all turns out okay in the end. Isn't that right, Edward?
Well, you did it. You've done it once so far, and it actually turned out to be the biggest single week podcast that I've had to date. So thank you for that.
Oh, no problem. Thank you for being you. Today, we're going to talk about an old school podcast guy that's awesome. His name is Danny Brown. He's got one podcast. Well, he's had several throughout the years. One is Podcaster Stories. And I know that he has another podcast that he really just kicked it off, and you're really excited about it, Ed.
Yeah, it's the history of the 3DO or 3DO gaming system, which came out in the early 90s. I actually not only remember it, I used to have one. I was literally the only person I knew that had one. I like to say it was a next-gen PS3 console before PS1 even came out. The graphics were fantastic for its day. The price, it was just a matter of pricing. It was just way too expensive because it was really the most powerful gaming system created up to that moment.
And I think Danny Brown is a great person to do just that. This conversation's awesome. We talk about a lot of great things in podcasting. We even talk about how he has a podcast with his wife. Ed, could you manage to do that?
No, my wife thinks that podcasts are stupid. She doesn't listen. She's never listened to one. Even, you know, she loves Michelle Obama. She will not listen to Michelle Obama's podcast. Wow. So she's not a podcast person. Every once in a while, I'll throw something into my own podcast just to see if she's listening, because I know she'll say something if she hears it. And she's never once said anything.
Well, Ed, you know I listen to your podcast, and I appreciate you.
I appreciate that.
I do hope everybody enjoys this interview with old man Danny Brown. Oh, he's going to love me saying that. Anyway, before we jump into that, let me take care of a little business. Woo, 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 you know it. This podcast would not exist without the awesome engagement I get from the community. If you're not in contact with me, I highly encourage you to reach out to me on Twitter at @podcast_father, or hit me up under the contact section on my website, podcastfather.com. If you really like what I'm doing, you can buy me a coffee or leave me a review on Apple Podcast or your favorite podcast listening platform. This podcast and myself are proud members of Quite the Thing Media. This network is awesome. It has podcasts that speak to you. Great network full of independent content creators. Go on site and check them out. QuiteTheThingMedia.com. All the music used on this podcast, I credit to the artist Young Karts. Go to the site and listen to the music, YoungKartBeats.com. The sponsors of this podcast are amazing. I highly encourage you to show them love just like you do me. PodPage, you can build a beautiful podcast website in 5 minutes. Automatically create a beautiful, listener-friendly podcast website from your RSS feed. Customize the design, get a professional look going. You'll be proud of all your work in just a few clicks. Make it easy and simple. Make sure you go online and create your podcast website, podpage.com. Flex Uptime. If you are a true crime, paranormal, scary, or comedy podcaster looking to find new listeners, consider submitting an episode to Indie Drop-In. Get more listeners, get more exposure. Submit an episode. Go online to indiedropin.com/creators. Oh, hell yeah, Riverside FM is great. Your online recording studio. The easiest way to record studio, quality podcasts, and video interviews from anywhere. If you're a podcaster or content creator, you must go to riverside.fm right now to get started. That's enough of the business. Now it's time to jump into this awesome conversation, which is powered by riverside.fm. It is going to be a fun conversation here. I've got the man, the myth, the legend, as he calls himself, the old man, Danny Brown. What's going on, man?
Yeah, I was going to say the myth, the legend, maybe myth or something. I don't know, but all good, Jeff. How are you?
I'm good. I'm excited to talk to you. You have been doing a lot of different things in podcasting for a long time. So I always like to talk to people that have a perspective of some experience. So I appreciate you taking the time to chat with me today.
And that, I think that's where the old man part comes in, right, from the intro there?
Yeah. I think you called yourself Old Man Brown to me once is actually what it was.
Yeah. It's like one of the podcasts I do. It's my wife calls me that when I put on this like really exaggerated Scottish voice. It's based on my granddad. And it's like really exaggerated. And she calls that my old man Brown voice, which is kind of where that came from.
You've got a crazy one because you have like the Scottish accent, but you also have the Canada in there. So you've got like the mixture.
Yeah, well, I moved here in 2006, but even before then, I left Scotland when I was 19, I think, or 20 years old, and I lived and worked in England for 20 years, maybe, before coming over here. So I think the accent's definitely softened over the years and been sort of picking up little bits and bats here based on where I'm located. But it's funny, when I speak to anybody back home, they'll say exactly what you said there, that I've got like that little Canadian finger on. But then when I speak to people here, it's like, no, I don't hear that here, Scottish. So I don't think I can really win.
It's not a bad thing. I think it's just naturally going to happen over time. And I could definitely, you and I speak with people that are, you know, still in the UK, and you can definitely tell a difference between yourself and them. Not right or wrong, but over time, it's definitely happened. As long as you start saying, hey, I'll be happy.
and they're based in Glasgow, which is a very, you know, very strong accent to start with for sure.
Well, I want to go ahead now that we're already into this, but I'll give you a minute to talk to everybody and kind of introduce yourself and all the things you're involved in and what you have been involved in, because quite a bit. It's not just everything right now, right? You've been doing this for a while.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you count a solitary episode on Blog Talk Radio way back in 2010, I've probably been podcasting for 11 years. But yeah, I mean, my main podcast and the stuff that I've been doing, that I'm currently doing anyway, probably from about 2018, maybe. Where I had an old podcast about just sharing, you know, like many people, just sharing stuff about life, but accompanied by like a dram of whiskey. And that was my sort of niche, if you like, which is pleasant enough. And then I created the podcast, my main podcast now, that was created back in 2019. So I kind of run, or I host multiple podcasts. I think I've got 3 on the go at the moment that are solo hosted, and then one that I co-host with my wife. And then I work in the podcast industry with the great folks over at Captivate FM.
How long have you been employed there?
Last September, so what's that, 14 months. I'd actually been a Captivate customer for a year. I just celebrated my 2-year anniversary, if you like, as a customer user at Captivate last month, October. So yeah, I was with them almost a year before joining them. And it was just like, it was fortuitous timing. They were looking for someone for the experience team. I was available. I sort of reached out, connected with Mark over there. We got hopped on a call and then joined the team, basically.
I love all the people there doing great things. And it's cool that you've got to be a really Since you've worked there, you talked about passing a year now. A lot of things have happened with Captivate since then. They've done a lot of great things, implementing new things, a lot of innovation going on there. And that's why it's cool just to be a part of that, I'm sure.
No, it's amazing. It's like you say, I mean, we're all podcasters at Captivate anyway. Our goal is to we'll look at a whole bunch of features. If it doesn't make sense to release it to help a podcast to grow the show in whatever manner that looks like, then we won't release the feature and we'll move on to something different. So yeah, it's definitely cool working in that environment for sure.
Why did you get into podcasting originally? You talked about blog, I think you said blog or radio earlier.
Yeah, so Blog Talk Radio, that was way back in 2010. So I'd been blogging for years. I probably started blogging in 1999, I think, when a live journal was still a thing. And I just wanted to try different experiences. So Blog Talk Radio came along. I'd seen some friends that I knew online or connections online. They'd put out some shows, and so I thought, I'll give this a try, see what it's like. Didn't really enjoy it at the time. It's just there was a lot of work. It wasn't as easy as what podcasting's like now, where the host can do a lot of stuff for you. It's pretty inexpensive to get the gear that you want to get started, etc. A bit different back then, and it was just a lot of work. So I just went back to blogging. But then it was just a matter of, okay, like I said, maybe 2017/2018. Again, I got really bored with blogging. I was finding I was having to force myself to push something out on a weekly basis, which wasn't enjoyable. So that's when I looked at podcasts, and I enjoyed listening to podcasts. I found it much more entertaining and inviting than reading words on a page, if you like. So that's where I sort of got into the podcasting side of things from where I am now, basically.
The internet's just changed so much since back then. But I mean, just back then, though, it was in college or high school, but still trying to do things online to back then when it was newer and figure out all the things that you can do. You're talking like things like buying bandwidth. Everything has changed so much now. You're right. It's crazy, but it's cool that yourself and myself and a lot of people still got involved back in the day on things online. And really, it kind of seems like it just grows from there, right? But it was completely different back then. I mean, you really had to work hard, even blogging and stuff, but let alone audio content out on the internet then. It was just difficult.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I think you had to be a lot more technically minded, especially for podcasts and having to know how to, manage MP3 files, how to get them onto a server, how to get tags and ID3 tags and all that cool stuff onto them. And then that's before you even have to get them onto I think iTunes was probably the only thing around at the time, and maybe a couple of other little apps or whatever. But yeah, vastly different experience than, creating an account on a free host now and just going for it with your phone.
Yeah, oh, for sure. The first podcast that you did, walk us through starting that.
Are we classing the Blog Talk Radio one?
Yep. I want to go back to this. The reason I want to go back to the radio is because when I got, my friend and I were creating content on the internet, it was always considered internet radio then. And I beat a dead horse every week on this podcast saying that. But you just solidified that as well. That's kind of generally what podcasting was considered, regardless of exactly what you're doing. Somehow it would all kind of go under the category of internet radio in a lot of people's opinion.
Well, I think it's interesting that they chose the name Blog Talk Radio, because you're essentially moving from blog to talk on the radio, right? So I'm pretty sure that's probably where they got the name from, Jeff, like you mentioned. But yeah, it was just that, in fairness, that was a relatively easy process, because much like podcast hosts today, Blog Talk Radio did a lot of the heavy lifting behind the scenes. So you would log into their studio and you'd stream stroke record, much like we're doing now, I guess, with Riverside. You'd stream, live on the Blog Talk Radio show. And your guests would call in, and if you wanted to bring on some of the listeners, they could call in and you could allow them to come on and start chatting. So very much like a talk radio show, I guess. At the time, as I mentioned, it was very much, it was like a one-off. I didn't really want to do any more after that. But interestingly enough, at that time, I was like a really active on social media. I started growing quite a chunky audience, and I'd gotten to know quite a few of the sort of heavy hitters, if you like, back then. And so my first guest was Chris Brogan, who I think he just released his Trust Agents book at the time, which was I think it was a New York Times bestseller. So there was a lot of buzz around him, and he'd grown a sizable audience by showing how you could use social media to build brands and businesses, etc., and connect better with your customers. So I got Chris on, and we were just chatting about the book and what it means to be a trust agent and how that ties into social media and community and all that fun stuff. It's funny because, like I say, I really, although I enjoy speaking with Chris, and then the folks that came on from the audience to ask Chris questions and stuff. I didn't enjoy it that much to continue it, but that episode, Blog Talk Radio sent me an email a couple of days later, sort of saying it was the number one listened show, or episode, sorry, for that week, because obviously Chris had brought his audience, I had a sizable audience at the time, so the two of them kind of connected, and it was like the most popular download or something, whatever it was. So, which I thought was ridiculous for like the first episode of a brand new show that no one's really heard of. So I went on a high with a couple of records over at Blog Talk Radio. And then I didn't bother after that because you'd mentioned it yourself. There was a lot more work and I was still actively blogging then. I was also working long hours because I was doing heavy commutes, etc. So I didn't really have the time to allocate, you know, doing podcasting properly.
I want to go off on a little bit of a sidebar here. You talked about he brought his audience on. As a podcaster, how do you approach that to a guest? Because I know you and I have been, we're in a couple conversations on Twitter with people, and that's kind of one of the things people ask, or I don't want to say complain, but they have somebody on their podcast and they get a little bit upset when that person doesn't promote it, maybe the way they think they should. So going off on this sidebar conversation, how do you approach things like that?
Yeah, well, I think in that particular case with Chris, I was fortunate that we'd known each other for a while. We'd connected at a couple of podcasting events like Podfest Toronto, and I think I'd done something in America that he was at as well. So we kind of known each other. So it was more like two friends, if you like, connecting. So there was less of an ask. I guess it was just, hey, I'll bring, you know, I'm going to promote Danny's show. And I said, hey, Chris is coming on. If you've got any questions for Chris. So that was kind of like a really happy medium for that example. Now I think it'd be very different. I know when I approach guests for my show, the hope is there that they'll promote it, either pre-recording or pre-publishing, etc. And I make it super easy for them to do so. I'll create a couple of audiograms and some like shareables or quotables, etc. and media to share. And I'll send that over to them in a Google file or a Google Drive. But the expectation isn't on me that my guest has to share for me. They've done enough already by coming on the show and offering their time and expertise for free with my listeners. And that's the way that I think that most podcasters should approach it. I get being frustrated that a big guest hasn't shared it with their 100,000 Twitter followers. But at the end of the day, how many of these followers are genuine anyway? And are they interested in what you're talking with their, you know, that person about? So I understand the frustration, but I think it's still our show. It's still our marketing responsibility.
I've got lucky when a couple of true crime friends that I've made that are, you know, some bigger podcasts, they actually will mention it on their podcast, which has made a huge difference because there's a difference I can see in analytics between if I feature you, no offense, like an indie podcaster, for example, versus somebody who's charting top 100 on Apple. If they do mention it, you can just see a big difference in the downloads, right? And it's a testament to the engagement that their listeners have. A lot of them do come in, they do listen because they get to hear a conversation with one of their favorite podcasters. And you just hope that you can retain, you know, one or two, really a handful of them at a time. They might listen to some other episodes. But no, you're right. It's a challenge to really expect them to do a whole lot more. So really it is up to the podcaster to creatively like figure out how to promote that and try to reach their audience as well. Does that make sense what I'm saying? It's a challenge.
Yeah, no. And like you said, there's a few little tricks you can use to try attract that audience by tagging them on social on the platforms where, you know, that visibility might be higher if you tag someone versus if you don't tag them. So LinkedIn, for example, was a perfect way. You know, Twitter to a degree. But yeah, I think to your point, the contextual promotion within an episode of a podcast to me is far more effective than sharing a tweet 5 or 6 times, you know, on a social platform that people may or may not see that tweet because of the time of day, what they're doing, etc., how the algorithms work, all that kind of weird stuff. If you're listening to a podcast and you hear your favorite podcaster mention another show, you're going to check that show out. If they like it, I'm probably going to like it too.
Yeah, absolutely. That's actually how I think a lot of us lit podcast listeners find new podcasts to listen to. I don't know about you, but if one of my favorite podcasters says that, then there's a high chance I'm going to check it out for sure.
Yeah. Well, it's like the Good Pods app where if you've connected with your friends on there, you can see what your friends are listening to, right? And it's little things like that. As you say, if my podcaster of choice is listening to this show or this episode, there's a reason for that. So,
hey, listener, are you a podcaster or content creator? Well, you've got to hear this. I'm going to talk to you about Riverside.fm. I use Riverside to record all my interviews for this podcast. I absolutely love it. Super simple to use, and I get the audio quality of an actual recording studio. You can have video resolution up to 4K, uncompressed crystal clear audio, and continuous file uploading throughout your recording. I've used a lot of different things to record this podcast, and I'll be honest with you, some of them were just way more complicated than they needed to be. That will not be an issue with Riverside FM. It is super simple, and with that, you still have the quality audio, which is very critical. The support team is great and always available to assist you with any questions that you may have. Damn it, I'm serious when I say this. Riverside FM is the ultimate great recording solution for podcasters and content creators. Go online right now and check it out. You can do a free trial and give it a shot. I guarantee afterwards you will be so happy with it. You'll be looking through all the different packages and you will find one that meets your needs. Legitimize the content you are recording and creating. Go to riverside.fm right now to get started. I want to ask you about you and your wife having a podcast. How's that work? My wife would never do something like that.
Yeah, well, it started off as a solo podcast with just my wife. And she talks about her 20-year journey with mental health. She was diagnosed with both depression and anxiety when she was in university. And so the podcast, she used to have a blog about it, and that got to be kind of hard work. So I suggested, why don't you do a podcast? I'll do the heavy lifting on the back end. I'll do the production, etc. You just get in front of the mic and speak and talk about your experiences and stuff. So she started that. And then like COVID came along, having to homeschool the kids for a while, all sorts of stuff. So that podcast and one other one that I was doing sort of took a backseat at the time. And we sort of decided, why don't we relaunch your solo podcast as a co-hosted one? Because Jacqueline's been on my show and I've been on hers, and we both talk about our own mental health issues and struggles over the years. And it made sense to maybe just collate that into one co-hosted show. So it's kind of cool. I tend to let Jacqueline drive that, and I'll be the sort of the co-conspirator, if you like.
That's super cool. Did she have her own studio, or do you share that lovely one behind you that I see?
This is on the renovation tomorrow. I want to get this really locked down into like proper acoustic panels, etc. But no, she's in her own little office. I've got her set up with some stuff there to, you know, minimize all the cool echoey stuff. But yeah, she's in her own room.
I'm jealous of that. You got quite the setup going on there. You're gonna drop those huge funds that you make, I guess. You're going to have an official two studios running out of there, huh?
I wish. It's more just offices that we've stuck some foam up on, and I've got a blanket over there and a rug below me, dead in the sound and stuff.
Yeah, well, I mean, how important do you think all that stuff is? Because I guess it depends what kind of podcast you have, right? But how important do you think that is? I mean, I'm sitting here with a $50 mic off of Amazon and, you know, going from there with some $20 headphones. Let's say you.
No, I think as long as it's not detrimental, like hugely detrimental to the quality of the sound. Like, you sound fine, Jeff. If I had my eyes closed, I wouldn't know you're speaking into, you know, like a little mic that's attached to your headphones. So I think for the majority of podcasters, just getting started with, you know, whatever mic you feel comfortable with and whatever fits your budget, etc. It's more about the environment for me. As long as you've not got like super hard surfaces and super echoey, big high ceilings and stuff like that, and you speak close to your microphone, that always helps. Even if your room isn't great, there, just good mic technique, that really helps. But I would always encourage people not to worry so much about the equipment, more about the environment and getting the courage, if you like, or there. Just getting up there and starting and seeing if you like podcasting before you spend a ton of money on a bunch of stuff.
That's a good advice. I actually do have a mic right here. You just can't see it. It's barely out of shot.
See, that's professional. You got like the no mic on shot there. That's like camera work there. There you go. That's cool.
I'm positioned literally, well, there you go, where you just can't see it. So no, but that's good advice. You don't want to drop a bunch of money and then it's not something you like to do. Some of us have been doing this for a while, but still I'm cheap, I guess, and don't really invest a whole lot into it. I just rely on my shining, amazing personality to get me through.
Which obviously it works. But yeah, I mean, but that's the thing though. You mentioned that, you know, you don't want to, people have been doing podcasts for a long time. A lot of podcasts don't get past the 6-episode mark. And if you've thrown out $600 on a Rodecaster and then another $300 on a mic and then XYZ, and you've only done it for 6 episodes and you've never gone back to visit it, that's It's just, I think a lot of people get sucked in by seeing gurus online saying, oh yeah, you need to buy this, you need to have this, you need to have this, or you can't be classed as a podcast. It's like, nah, not really.
I think if you're doing like an audio drama podcast, you might want to have a little bit better setup than I do, right? But conversationally speaking, I mean, this seems to work. But it, like I said, it really does depend on the type of podcast, because if I'm doing some night, and I've heard some really good audio fiction drama podcasts, you wouldn't just want to have any sort of little setup for that.
No, no, for sure. And I think a lot of audio, like voiceover artists especially, they'll use enclosed booths. So basically, it's almost like just a stand-up room, completely padded out, and all you've got is your microphone in front of you, and that's it. So, yeah.
You have a podcast. It's, I don't want to say similar to mine, because every podcast is different, but the underlying theme is similar, right? Podcaster stories. I like to share people's stories on this podcast as well. How much fun do you have doing that?
I have a lot of fun. That's my main podcast. And before I had that one, it was the one that I'd mentioned where I was just, you know, talking about any old thing that had happened that week. And that was fun. But I was, again, getting to the stage where I felt like I was having to come up with ideas as to what I wanted to talk about. And that was making me lose my enjoyment, which was what happened with my blogging. And I didn't want to do that again with podcasting. So there was a few, I think there was maybe 3 episodes on that show where I had a couple of guests come on, or had a guest come on. And I really enjoyed that dynamic and getting to know about them and them sharing their story. So that sort of spurred me to put that previous show on the back burner or sunset it now and just concentrate on a pure interview style show that tries to get behind the stories of the podcaster, hence the name of the show, and more personal stories that they generally don't talk about online or in their own podcast.
Right. And that's where it's a little bit different, because I do that a little bit, but we also talk about, generally speaking, not always, but we talk about podcasting quite a bit. I do really enjoy the conversations, though, when I get with like an illustrator or something, where it's not just podcasting necessarily, but I try to have, like once a month, try to have some variety, you know, try to change it up a little bit. But
yeah.
No, it's always fun talking to other people that enjoy the same thing you do and kind of hearing their story behind everything, for sure.
Well, I think it's also, I know as a listener, I prefer either co-hosted shows or shows that have sort of 3-4 guests or at least one guest or whatever, because the dynamic's immediately different. And we could be talking about podcasting equipment that we just mentioned earlier there and have 2 very different viewpoints on that. And now we've got a back and forth where the listener gets to hear, you know, that sort of dynamic as well. I feel that multi-person shows for me are more enjoyable as a listener. Unless, like you say, there's like an audiobook or a drama that you just want maybe that one person telling the story.
I agree. And I think we were talking the other day about the introduction to that. My show has this introduction to every interview. And for me, I was like, how am I going to approach this? Because I really don't like just sitting here myself talking into a microphone. I mean, I'll do that for ad reads and stuff, but it's awkward for me. So it would be awkward for me to record 3 minutes introducing you. So
right.
Big thing to me was, how can I highlight more content creators and then also do something that's not so awkward? And like you said, I think the banter between things is much more enjoyable than just myself sitting here saying, you know, Danny Brown, he's 32 years old. He is from, you know, you're not, well, I figured you'd like that. 30.
No, no. But thank you for that. I appreciate it.
you know what I mean, though. That's a hard thing, and I've done it before, and I don't necessarily at this point in time in podcasting enjoy just doing a podcast by myself.
Well, I think as well, you might sort of get trapped into becoming blasé about the intro then, and you could lose listeners before they even get to the episode proper. If it's just you and you feel like you're going through the motions because you're trying to think of how can I make this different? How can I say this differently or whatever? And at some stage, we've all been there, it gets blasé and you lose interest yourself. And because of the way that podcasting is so intimate to the listener, you're right in their earbuds. The listener can hear if you're not into the topic or what you're speaking about. And that, for me, that's the biggest turn off of podcasting. That's why I'll unfollow a show, for example. So I like that approach, because now you've got someone else who's got maybe a different dynamic from yourself. And that really, you've got that bouncing back and forth again, right?
Yeah. And it's almost, I obviously do it for like a month at a time, but I go through these, I'm running through my head, like who would be a good person to bounce and do these intros for the month, kind of bounce off of each other. How would the dynamics work? How would our banner work? Yeah, I consider all that. And so far it's been good, but it's also like a double-edged sword, like I was telling you, because I don't want to get too far off topic of the, or go on too long before the, before the interview is played, the conversation. But I also want them to be able to introduce themselves, kind of promote what they're doing, and then talk about the person that I'm going to feature a little bit too. So it's definitely a challenge. You try to help and promote others as much as you can and have a good time doing an introduction. That's what I'm trying to do.
So that's where you could maybe Rickroll listeners as well. You could put a timestamp on your show notes, or you can mention it in the audio. You could say, hey, John's going to be on in 7 minutes, 27 seconds, but I'm going to speak to Karen first. So someone jumps to 7:27. Nope, still Karen. She's going, you. Sorry, guys. It's nope, still me. That's what you get for skipping ahead. John's actually 8:22. Now go there.
I think generally speaking, people have no shame in skipping ahead, hitting the 30-second forward button or whatever it is. You know, it seems to be a little bit easier to do that. Let me ask you something, though. We're talking and kind of going through some advice stuff. I don't know about you, but lately I've seen so much, I don't want to say podcast guru because not everybody is. Everybody's trying to give podcasting advice these days. Am I the only one that's seen that?
I'm sure you've seen it. Mark, who's the CEO and co-founder of Captivate, he posts on Twitter a lot about how he's just seen an uptake in these kind of pitches. Hey, how can we help you with your podcast, etc.? And you're thinking, did you even bother, you know, researching who you were sending your pitch to before you sent it? But no, it's like social media in its heyday back maybe 2012, 2013. And I saw a lot of consultants, like social media consultants, and I'm air waving there or air quoting for the listeners, but I saw a lot of social media consultants all out the woodwork that were going to show you how to use social media for your business or your brand or etc. You know, personal branding, I hate that. And it was the same. It's like, I think they see an opportunity because at the time social media was going through a boom, if you like. There was platforms jumping up everywhere and people were making some decent money from it, from speaking and you know, appearing at events and stuff. So when you see something like that, you're always going to get people that are looking to make a quick buck and take advantage. And unfortunately, with something, I guess, like podcasting, where it can still be, even though there's a lot of cool hosts out there that make it super easy for people to get started, it can still be technical because what's an MP file? An MP3 file, why is it important that it's a consistent bit rate? That kind of stuff. So now you're getting people coming out and saying, well, I listened to Pat Flynn's episode one time and now I know everything about podcasting there is to know. I'm going to sell that to people that know a little bit less than me and take advantage of that. And it's sad to see because there's some great people and great companies out there doing it properly and giving advice properly. And then you see something like that.
I had a guy DM me a while back. Like, I know we've talked about this. He pretty shitty DM, honestly. He said something like, what was it? I know you added the cast, but when I think of Podfather, I only think of Adam Curry. You could tell he just wanted to fire that message off to be a wise ass. Had never listened to or even looked into anything that I've been doing. Has nothing to do with the legacy effect of the name at all. But that got me thinking, you know. Then I immediately go and look. He's an old school podcast guy, charging like $1,000 for advice. And meanwhile, my ass and yours too. My DM is lit up with people asking for help, and I gladly do the best that I can for absolutely nothing. Why? Because we've been doing this off and on since 2005, and I feel like I've learned some things that I can share with people. I'm not saying I'm the go-all-to of everything, but I'm surely not going to charge anybody money, and it's surely not going to be $1,000. So I thought that cheap shot was pretty funny. So you have a lot of the old school people, then you have a lot of the people that are just coming in randomly and doing it. So I see what you're saying. It's almost like the social media heyday for sure. You know, advisor going to help you out. But people like Mark, as you mentioned, ask with very valuable people that we all go to, certainly aren't charging you money to help you.
No, and I think that's it. To your point, I think sometimes old school gets threatened by newcomers to the space. And even though the newcomers aren't newcomers per se, because they've also been around for a while, Mark's been a podcaster for years. He's created podcasting companies since 2015, I think, maybe, with podcast websites and stuff like that. So he knows his stuff, as does his co-host Gary Aylott on a Star Wars show. He's been a podcaster for years. Kieran, who's our CTO, he's been involved in podcasting for years. So the newcomers is such that maybe they haven't been around since, say, 2005 or 2000 or whatever way you want to look at it. So I think sometimes old guard maybe gets scared off by that. But then, yeah, like you say, you've got the very, very, not even newcomers, just the shows looking to take advantage of newcomers. And that's sad to see, because like you say, there's a lot of great advice out there for free. And I think by providing and sharing what you've learned and the mistakes you've made, that helps other people get, you know, avoid these mistakes and get started and do their show. That all comes back around. So it may not be via financial methods, but it could be listeners and recommendations to your show. It could be consultant work down the line because someone wants you to come in and teach their business and their employees how to, you know, how to be an effective business podcast that includes employees and showcasing employees and stuff like that. So I think there's definitely ways to do it right. And that's who I sort of gravitate towards and who I want to learn from and I'll recommend.
Right. And I'm not opposed to learning from anybody, right? I mean, you can really learn from anybody if you're open to it.
No, exactly. Just like some of the, because I'm at Captivate, so we see this, you know, frequently where a question or something that a new podcaster is trying to do, we may never have thought of or come across before because we've been used to something for a few years. And it helps us improve, A, the product, but also our way of thinking when it comes to podcasting. It's like, wow, I would never have thought of that. And that's a great little trick that podcasters can do. Yeah, so yeah, we're learning all the time from new podcasters as well.
You talked about like podcasting boom. Content creating in general has gone through a lot of different booms. YouTube obviously hit it big a few years back now. And you talk about internet radio and stuff going plenty far back. But in the last couple years, due to COVID, you said it, podcasting really has had a good boom. And with that has come good and bad. Certainly a field that we're all welcome to share, but it's also kind of, I don't want to say lower the quality, but overall, when you add it in bulk numbers, you're going to always have a reduction in quality of things.
And I think people forget, they focus so much on the equipment, they forget about the quality of what they're producing. And I think that's maybe where education needs to come from podcasters, from hosts, from, you know, content creators, that this is how you really make a podcast palatable, for want of a better word, because that's not a very good word either, because that's almost like saying, you know, it's not tasty, I don't like that. And that's not the case at all. But yeah, I think there's definitely, there can be a quality control issue because it's so easy to get into, but the right advice isn't being given. And that's where, you know, Luffs, for example, if there's one single thing that I would love the whole podcast and industry to do is have a standardized Luffs level, you know, like a loudness level, because Spotify's got a different one from Apple. Apple's got a different one from X. X has got a different one from Y. Some hosts keep your audio at mono, or some hosts, they'll sort of maybe not have your audio the way you'd edited it and recorded it. So there's not there's like a big disparity, or there can be a big disparity. So there's nothing worse than listening to an ad, then an intro, then the guest, then some music, and they're all at different levels, you know, especially if you're listening in headphones. So I think, to your point, Jeff, quality is a huge area for where education can be improved, I think. And I know there's a bunch of great people and great hosts doing that as well.
I'm going to take a minute here to tell you about a fine sponsor of this podcast, Indie Drop-In. If you're a true crime, paranormal, scary, or comedy podcaster looking to find new listeners, consider submitting an episode to be featured on Indie Drop-In shows. If your episode meets some minimum requirements, Indie Drop-In will play your episode to real listeners. The best part is, the listeners like your show. Indie Drop-In provides easy links for them to subscribe. It's 100% free. You get to drop your feed into a established feed that already has actual, real listeners. This is great, guys. This is an amazing way to grow your audience. These listeners are already there. They listen to your episode on Indie Drop-In feed. They will go over and find your podcast and become a subscriber and love it. Greg, the creator of Indie Drop-In, just absolutely loves being involved in the independent podcast community. He is a great podcast mind. Make sure you give him a follow on Twitter at Indie Drop-In. But more importantly, go to indiedropin.com/creators. Get the submission going and submit an episode of your podcast into the Indie Drop-In feed. Hurry now. Get to it. You really enjoyed the Agent Palmer episode, where I kind of let him have the reins and go off on any sort of tantrum or go down any rabbit hole that he wanted, which I don't have a problem with that at all. I'm going to give you that opportunity, man. I would like to talk about what you think's coming up for the future of podcasting, but I also want to give you the opportunity, just because your knowledge of podcasting, to talk about anything that you think should be brought up, knowing that a decent portion of this audience percentage is podcasters or content creators.
Yeah, so I think like one of the big things, obviously, that we're seeing a lot of, especially maybe the last 6 months or so, is the podcast 2.0 index and what these guys are trying to achieve and how they're looking to open source with the likes, you know, with a lot of podcast apps looking to try corner the market now. I know there's been a bit of a pushback from some podcasters about trying to keep it open source, more kind of like the WordPress stroke blogging stuff from a few years back. So it'll be interesting to see how the various podcast apps and hosts to a degree adapt some of the features from podcast 2.0. Like transcription has been a really good one. It's made it more accessible for listeners that are hearing impaired, for example, to download a podcast app, and that app supports transcriptions, because not a lot of apps still, even now, not a lot of apps support transcriptions, but it's definitely a lot more than it was a year ago, for example. So I think it'll be interesting to see what podcast stroke 2.0 features and options might come in.
Hey, Danny, can you explain what that is real quick? Because I think there's a lot of people don't know about what that is. You talked about the index and podcast 2.0.
Yeah, so podcast 2.0, it's your man Adam Curry and I think Dave Weiner, if I recall, or Dave Thompson. I can't recall offhand, I apologize. but I've basically created an online resource where, based on discussions with podcast hosts and podcast apps and obviously podcasters, what features they'd like to see made standard, if you like. So for example, I mentioned transcripts, for example. There's like timestamps, like stuff like that, where they're trying to make features that will make podcasting a more interactive, if you like. At the moment, they're working on a cross-app commenting system. So no matter where a comment is posted on podcast apps that support commenting, that will be pulled in to this single repository, and then you can reply to each and every comment from one destination. So stuff like that, where it's really trying to make podcasting a more two-way street as opposed to the traditional one-way street of voice into ear.
That's a great description. For a lot of people that are new, and there are some new people, new podcasters listening to this for sure, that's a good description of that, man.
Oh, thank you. I'm not a very technical guy. I've got far smarter people around me that has all that stuff. So simple is my mantra.
Well, sorry to cut you off there, but no, I'll let you get back to you were saying.
No worries. So obviously podcast 2.0, it's going to be interesting to see where that comes in. Social audio, I'm not sure if I think that's going to have a major impact. I know there's a lot of companies put a lot of big money into some of the social audio apps. So Fireside, for example, from Mark Cuban. But I see a lot of podcasters, and I read like the Pod News industry publication, stuff like that, where it looks like after an initial, you know, boom, when Clubhouse came out, then Twitter Spaces and Spotify's Green Room, etc., numbers seem to be dropping off, and most rooms are like dead zones with maybe one or two people in there. So I'm not sure if social audio is going to have as big an impact as they were hoping it would be. But I think that the big opportunity now for podcasters, especially with more hosts offering it, is dynamic content. I know we've spoken a lot, Jeff, about some of the cool stuff that can be done with dynamic content, way beyond just inserting a pre-roll ad and a mid-roll or a post-roll ad, but how you can really utilize that to, A, make an episode as good as it can be from a production point of view and from a contextual point of view, but B, as a listener, how you can get your listeners much more involved in what your episode's about and how they can be more involved with you, you know, as a podcaster.
You pitched a really cool idea on that I'm going to have to try.
Well, that's the thing. There's like, Brian Bartletta, who does the Sounds Profitable newsletter and podcast, he does some really cool stuff with his dynamic content. He's probably got about 8 or 10 insertions per episode. And it's not just your usual ad or your usual pre-roll promo. It's taking stuff and sound bites and that for what he's talking about in the ad tech industry and inserting that at various points through the episode. And that's where, like, that's what I want to get my head into when it comes to dynamic content, is if I've got a guest come on and they're talking about mental health, for example, I want to be able to insert a soundbite for a recommended resource. Hey, if you're struggling with mental health and you feel you need to talk to someone, call this number, and insert that at the point of listen when someone's talking about something that could be triggering, for example. So I think there's a lot of cool stuff that we can do as podcasters when it comes to what our audience can enjoy and benefit from, you know, when it comes to dynamic content.
Yeah, actually the week that you and I were doing this recording, that will be the week that my episode, my conversation with Brian comes out. So you're correct.
Oh, nice.
Very resourceful fella and much to learn from what he's doing. I enjoy both the newsletter and, of course, like you said, he has that in podcast form as well.
Yeah, it's just crazy how he does what he uses that for. So I'm looking forward to that episode. That should be a good one.
Well, Danny, what else you got, man? I mean, what else do you see coming down the pipeline for the future of podcasting?
I think it's going to come down to what podcasters really need. Now, that can be from a host level. It can be from a hardware level. It can be from, software, for example. I use one of the things I hate about podcasting is editing. And if I could afford to pay someone to do editing, I would definitely do that, because I enjoy listening back afterwards. Don't get me wrong, because I might have missed a soundbite that I picked up while editing. I now turn that into a promotional soundbite, if you like. But the very process of sitting down and trying to find the ums and the ahs and the mistakes and maybe a dog barking or whatever. So I use a software that helps automate a lot of that for me, and then I'll go in and manually tweak it to make it sound, you know, less AI and less robotic, if you like. So I think anything, whether, like I say, whether it's a host level, whether it's hardware or software, anything that makes a podcaster's life super, super easy so they can really concentrate on the content that they're putting out and how that's going to enrich the listeners' lives, which in turn should hopefully enrich the podcaster's life, whether that's financially or, you know, reputationally or whatever. I feel there's a huge opportunity. And I know it was kind of cool when Mark did a live stream last week, or was it earlier this week actually, sorry, about how to use the dynamic content Amy for Captivate. And he showed you how to insert various stuff using his own show. And one of the commenters on the live stream had very kindly said, well, I think we'll probably use this as like a testimonial because it's pretty cool. But she mentioned that Captivate is like an ecosystem for podcasters, or like a complete ecosystem for podcasters, because it encapsulates a lot of stuff that a podcaster needs that normally if you had to separate all the different features, you'd have to be paying 5 or 6 subscriptions to different platforms or software apps, etc. So I think there's a huge opportunity for companies, like I say, whether it's host or the software that I use for editing, to really A, make a product that makes podcaster lives easy, but B, that has an open API that talks to each other, because I think that's where you get the real magic happening, that I can have Zapier connected to Auphonic, connected to Captivate, connected to Slack, connected to Aweber newsletter, and everything gets automated for me from a production point of view and a promotion point of view.
You bring up a great point on this production part, because everybody seems to want to focus on the distribution part becoming easier. An example would be like an anchor. You know, we'll get it on every platform, you know, or whatever. But to me, I don't mind actually manually doing that, because one, it gives me more analytics, right? I mean, far more than one usually does. So I don't mind going in there and doing that. If you do that in Apple Podcasts, that's a game changer for analytics you can see from that. But you're right, the production, the kind of the post-production part on the editing end, huge opportunity there, because that is, and people that thoroughly do edit their podcasts, like I do myself here, like you talking ums and stuff like that, I do that. That is all very time-consuming, and it should be considered of making that process easier. You're absolutely right. That should be more of a focus.
Well, it's like, and I know a lot of people, I mean, I use Descript as well for some of the editing stuff that I do. And obviously they've got the filler words option where you can choose what a filler word is. And generally it's your ums or, you know, whatever a filler word would be classed as, which is great because it'll remove that for you. But I tend to find that can sometimes lead to a disjointed audio. It's almost like, you know, when you're watching YouTube videos where you've got these little jumps, it's almost like Max Headroom back in the day, where it's not a natural movement. You've got someone speaking, then they quickly like a sort of robotic jump to a different frame or something.
Yeah.
So I find it Descript can sometimes do that. I love the platform, but I think we have to be a little bit careful, to your point, as to how much we hand over until we can trust it to do the stuff we don't want to do, but not make it disjointed.
This has been an awesome conversation. I do want to kind of ask you, though, what's some future podcasting goals and things that you want to do and want to get involved in?
Yeah, so I mean, obviously, we mentioned this, I think, over in Twitter, in the DMs. Like, from a podcasting point of view, I want to really, I guess, lock down the focus of my shows. So Podcast Stories, that's been going for, I think, 2 years now, and that's got its niche. That knows what it's doing. The Old Man Brown comedy, like, parody show or whatever I just launched, that was just set up as a joke. I don't know if I want to keep doing that or not. It's fun, but it's also, it can be laborious because now I'm trying to put on this really stupid, emphasized Scottish accent, and it's hard to put on an accent for a set amount of time. So I don't know. I guess I just want to be super laser focused into the shows that I really enjoy making, and how do I grow them, and how do I take them to where I want them to be, and what does that look like? Does it look like, for Podcast Stories, for example, once COVID's kind of part of our everyday lives where we're not in lockdowns and stuff like that, do I want to take that on the road? Do I want to keep it remote? That kind of stuff. So it's really about finding out who I want to be and what I want to do, I guess, as podcasting. And then from a professional point of view, just continue to see like the cool ass stuff that Captivate does, because it's knowing what's coming down the line in the next 3 to 6 months. Like 2021's been an awesome year and we've ended it in style with Amy, but knowing what else is coming down the line, it's really cool to be involved in seeing how people were going to use that as well.
What about some videos? Are you going to get into that? Become a YouTube star?
No, I've definitely got a face for podcasting. That's what my granddad would probably say. I do want to experiment with video. I won't lie, but I'm not going to do like a vlog or video podcast. It'd be more like quick live streams, quick little tips, quick, hey, I'm going to be doing this on Sunday evening at 6 p.m. It's completely freestyle, can be anything. Here's a link. Join if you want to, and stuff like that. So more like little friendly get together live streams, I think.
You think podcasting has more of a place on YouTube?
It can if it's done right. I don't think you can just say, for example, record an audio version of your podcast and then throw it through a headliner and upload that to YouTube with just an image. I think that would possibly put people off. I know if I'm watching something on YouTube, I need to be engaged. So that needs to have moving images, you know, on video. And if I was listening, watching a podcast, I guess, then it wouldn't be interesting for me. Not to say that it wouldn't be interesting for others, but I know like some of the podcasters that we know, for example, in the network, they are doing great on video podcasting because they've got the format locked down, and it's awesome. That's what I like, and that's what I enjoy watching. But if it's just a matter of someone throwing up an audio file with a static image and maybe some words popping up now and again to try get an extended reach, I'm not sure that's the right approach to that.
Yeah, I actually didn't even think about it until more recent times, where people are listening to YouTube and they have the ability to listen to it when their screen or phone locks, right? They can still listen to it. So I guess that's a little bit of a game changer, but yeah, nevertheless, it's always like everybody wants to have it on there just in case, but people really struggle with how to utilize it if they're not just going to full out show their literally you and I sitting here recording. This seems like people struggle with how they're going to manage that.
Yeah, and it's possible that it could be bonus content, and you sort of make your listeners aware, hey, you can find us on YouTube as well, but it's just the audio version. But if you prefer having YouTube on in the background, it's there. So like you say, maybe where it's just a secondary audience that could pick it up, or if your existing listeners like watching YouTube and then have it on in the background when they finish watching videos, but they'll have music playing or whatever. So yeah, that makes sense.
I could hold you up here all night, man, but let you get back to the things that you're doing. We'll have to do this again sometime. It's fun. I really do appreciate you taking a few minutes of your evening to chat with Jeff.
No, I've really enjoyed it, and I'm disappointed that I didn't last as long as Jason. He's never going to let me live that down.
Well, we can do another parter for sure.
I was going to say that you can stitch them together, make it a 10-hour episode.
Exactly. And we can put it on YouTube.
Sounds good.
Seriously, though, man, I do appreciate it. And I really always encourage everyone to check out everything you're doing. And I'm going to give you a second to talk about that, because you are a great person to learn from. You've got a newsletter. You've got a podcast. You work for Captivated FM, which is awesome. You've got a lot going on, so I'm going to let you tell everybody how to find you and all the awesome things you're doing.
Oh, I appreciate that. So, my main podcast is actually on a little hiatus at the moment. I'm just lining up some guests for that. But again, COVID sort of took my focus away from it. But that's podcasterstories.com. And you can find all the past episodes there and how to follow on your favorite apps, etc., or the newsletter. You can find me on Twitter. It's Danny Brown CA, and that's just for Dan Brown Canada, but Canada CA as opposed to Canada. I'm sure Jeff will put in the show notes because I didn't explain it well there. But yeah, it's Danny Brown CA on Twitter. And then, yes, obviously Captivate FM. It's like, I mean, obviously I'm biased, I work there, but as I mentioned, I was a very happy customer at least a year before I started working there. And I still class myself as a customer because I get to use their products, you know, every day of the week. So yeah, check out Captivate FM. It's definitely the home for the serious indie podcaster. And it's just because we're podcasters ourselves, we only bring stuff out that we feel can help, you know, grow your show or grow your podcast the way you want it to.
I love that you say, I know I'm chatting with a podcaster when they say Jeff will have that in his show notes. Never fails.
Well, no, it's funny. It's like my wife, when was this? I think my wife, maybe over the summer, possibly. She had to get a whole bunch of stuff for a trip we were going on. It's just like a weekend away, getting the kids away. And so she was wanting to go to the store and get a bunch of stuff. She called me and says, there was something that you wanted and I can't remember what it was. And I said, oh, it's in the show notes. I meant it's on the grocery list, but I said, it's in the show notes. And she says, what are you saying?
That is funny, man. Hey, Danny, seriously, thanks again for taking the time, man. We'll definitely be in touch.
That's awesome, Jeff, and I appreciate it. Take care.
Thanks for listening and thanks for telling a friend. But more importantly, thank you for supporting independent content creators. I hope you enjoyed this episode and continue to listen to the upcoming ones. I'm really trying to do something special here by highlighting all the amazing things all these amazing content creators are doing. I hope you continue to join me on my journey. I'm Jeff, aka Podcast Father, the indie podcaster. Keep being you, keep being great.